Albus Heimsko, Post Home, and other things. Where do you derive your income? And that, of course, will explain why you mentioned that one person left the community.
Yes. The cause of this exit is only financial reasons.
I don't think it is understood what it means to exit from the community.
Yes.
Ausgeschlossen.
Not ausgeschlossen. Voluntary.
We don't have such a thing. Therefore, it must be explained.
All right.
How, will you explain?
Yeah. A voluntary exit. They have some problems with the Jewish community. They mean the taxes are far too high. You know, unsere lieben Brüder und Schwestern, many of them are difficult, and they say they don't want to pay taxes, so they go out from the Jewish community. Or in other cases, they are married with non-Jewish people.
Yeah, may I?
They go over to the other.
Yeah, may I explain it?
Yes.
The social organization of the community, and this is not new. It applied to Germany before.
Yes.
You belong to a religious community. A Jew belongs to a religious community. And as long as a Protestant to the Protestant and a Catholic to the Catholic, as long as you are inscribed as a member of that community, you pay taxes to the Jewish community in this particular case. The only way to not to pay taxes is to go before, I don't know, is it a court or what, and say, look,
to the court,
I don't want to be a member of the Jewish community.
Yes.
Strike me from the list. So you are legally struck for the list.
Yes.
Now I said ausgeschlossen, which means expulsion.
No, never.
The man excludes himself.
Yes.
And after he is excluded legally from the community rolls, he doesn't pay taxes.
No.
Now you don't have to belong to a Jewish community, but you must indicate that you do not want to belong to it. This would answer the other question. How do you get your income? Every member of the community pays a tax. Is this tax sufficient?
2%.
2% of
what's
your
about
income?
Question.
2% of your salary of income?
Yes.
And what about this man if he dies? Where will he be buried?
He can be buried at in the Jewish cemetery.
He could?
Yes, he could if he will, yes.
This is taken care of.
We can never neglect a Jew to be buried in the Jewish cemetery.
So he doesn't actually the Jewish religion, this organization.
Yes, only this
organization. Setup.
Well, naturally, by conversion, does he lose the benefits of all the facilities available to the Jews? Can he come here for lunch?
Not on the average. Not in the average. He can come every opportunity he will.
Could he go to synagogue?
No. Yes.
Even not be a member.
And not neglect him. The synagogue. Never. This is a Jewish law.
A man can exclude himself, but look, if he needs to go to if he wants to go to a synagogue, he may. If he gets old and wants to go to the old folks' home, you will. He can come here. So actually,
no, he cannot come to the home of the old folks.
He cannot.
No.
But he can be buried in the Jewish cemetery.
This is a benefit only for the members.
But if he should die, you will not permit him to be buried elsewhere. So I said, it's a noble expression. You know what a Goslin is, a murderer. To say this, I Yiddish and Goslin is not so terrible. It doesn't kill people. So actually they get most of the benefits?
Yes.
Yes.
He can come here in the house every time.
Mr. Kroll.
Yeah.
Mr. Kroll, I would like to know where your allegiance lies. Do you understand what I mean?
Allegiance?
Your allegiance. Okay. Do you consider, are your feelings given to the Jews, or are your feelings given to Germany, or?
I understand. It is a very, very hard question to answer. Because it is individual. We know the development in the on the political area. And we know that they are growing, the right extremes parties in the country. We know this. So we have very different feelings. But I mean, we have to consider it from another view of point. There is not question, am I in the first line a Jew or in the second line a German or vice versa. So we make our duties as German citizens. And so it is quite individual how you feel it. If I am asked my personally, I can't answer as a representative for the Jewish community. If you answer, I have many, many contra feelings to say I'm German. No? Because there's always a wall between the Christian and me and the Jews because of the past. You understand me?
Yes. Well, I asked you because I wanted to know how you felt about the Zionist movement.
I didn't understand. We are working for Israel, and if we didn't have Israel, we had no Jewry here in Germany. Israel is our basis for acting and for feeling and for studying and for our way of life. No? That's my opinion. There are only, a little couple of Jews here in Berlin who are thinking that they are, in the first way, they are Germans and then they are Jews. There are a few, but only a few. And we are working for Israel because we mean without Israel we have no reason to exist. We know there is a connection, it's a deep and intensive connection between Israel and the diaspora. So it is our basis to live, no? And there is a very big Zionist organization here, and I belong to it.
Sir, I would like to know how many Jews do exclude themselves, and for what reasons do they do this?
School? What is that?
Exclude. How many Jews exclude themselves?
Right. For what reasons do they do that?
Yeah. And why?
Yeah.
But he did indicate why.
Maybe one a month. Because what I mentioned before, the exit of the Jewry, you mean that, yes?
What I mean is...
And the voluntary exit of the Jewry, yes? You mean that?
Yes.
Yes. As I said before, he mentioned...
They are married with non-Jews, and so they go out. They will belong to the other religion, you know? And other again, because of financial reasons.
Yes.
Because you realize the need for the Israeli state and the connection that it has with Germany, are you trying to preserve a Jewish society in Germany rather than giving the State of Israel the German Jew?
Yes. If I have understood your question in the right way, I can tell you that so long as Jewry exists here, there I have told you before, they are every month they are coming Jews and they are going Jews. There are about 6,000 Jews here in Berlin, and there are 25,000 Jews in the whole Western Germany, about 25,000. And so long this fact exists, so long there exists a Jewish organization in Germany who supports them and take care of the cultural and the religious tasks for the Jewry. I hope I have understood you right.
Yes, yes.
Why do you suppose the majority of...
Just a moment. But another question is, we can't tell our members, you have to be here in Germany. It's up to the individual member. If he means he can't live here, all right.
Why do you suppose the majority of Jews would want to stay here, would want to live here?
The majority, yes, I mean.
Why would the majority of Jews want to live in Germany?
You must understand one thing. The most of them, I have a statistic here, most of them are old, yes? The elder generation. So they will have their security and the benefits of the life when they are older, so they want to stay here, yes? Because it's more comfortable, yes? It's for me, it's the same question. I have often thought to immigrate to Israel, and maybe I do it later, but it is a very, very, very hard question. But I must tell you that in Berlin, the anti-Semitism is not very strong, and the non-Jewish organizations and the Senate, as the government of Berlin, you know, Berlin is one country in the federation of the German countries, you know? Like in USA, you have many states, you have Alabama, you have Dakota, and so on, and so on, so on. And Berlin is an independent country, and the government of this country is very, very friendly. We have got this building here, and the ground upon which we are staying, we have got this from the Senate as a gift.
And they
support us every month.
Well, let me ask you a question. Yeah. This was built on the ground of the old Anastasia synagogue.
Yes, yes.
It was destroyed in Kristallnacht.
Yes, yes, yes.
Then perhaps the land was confiscated by the Nazi government.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you say you got it back, it means they gave it back to you.
But recognizing that
the Nazi confiscation was not legal.
All right, I will explain it. We got in restitution for that ground here, you know? We got a restitution from for this ground here upon the which
the old
synagogue stood. I have a pamphlet I will give you later.
How much did the building cost to build?
I mean it was about 6 million.
Provided by the government?
Marx.
And they provided it all as restitution.
As restitution.
But in other words, they gave you back the land which had been taken.
Yes, from repatriation, restitution for this. So they gave us it once more, you know?
And gave you the 6 million marks?
They built it, they paid it.
Nice fellows. Would you say that the anti-Semitism in this country is increasing or decreasing?
Yeah. In Berlin, I don't believe it is increasing, but in Western Germany, I'm sorry to say it is increasing, yes.
Jeffrey?
Yes. Yes.
I have a question. You said that most of the people who are staying here, the Jews, are the older people. Mm. Yet we heard a couple nights ago, we heard from university students, Jewish university students,
yes,
who said they wanted to stay here and wanted to become more and more involved in politics of this country. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking, why would they want to become involved in the politics here when you say that most of the people staying are...
You hear the answer. Most of the people don't want. There are a few mentioned to you. Only how many students were there this evening who said...
Well, I sort of had the impression that it was most of this group of young Jewish university students.
If they are talking to you very frankly, I mean they have the opinion that they don't want to live all this here in Germany. I mean that. In their heart, yeah, they are thinking otherwise than they tell you. I mean it.
Why would they tell us what they thought?
There are somebody tells you frankly what they are thinking and other don't tell you what they are thinking. But it is in a revolution of feelings, you know. It's a conflict in which you stay. It's the same path. We told before, the Jew in Germany is living on his baggage, But the Jewish community, the board of community, was very, very sorry that this has been told the visitors, which we understand, yes?
Who says that they're living on the baggage?
I told for many years ago, an attraction
sitting on
to show that you don't know where, if or whether you can stay here in Berlin, and how long can you stay.
You don't feel absolutely secure to sit on your back.
But I can tell you also that it's always the same questions. Of all of the
tests. Well, that's...
Yes. No wheat without this test.
Naturally.
Because it is natural.
This is natural.
Natural, yes.
If they would only put up other questions, yes, then they wouldn't
can
be
I
honest
ask,
with you.
Yes. Can I ask one additional one?
It's another
yes,
one.
All right.
You say that the amount of anti-Semitism in Western Germany is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
You also say that the older Jews feel comfortable here.
Yes.
I don't understand that. Why would they feel comfortable here if the amount of anti-Semitism in this country is increasing?
Because they don't feel it in their daily life, you know?
Yet.
Yes.
They don't feel it.
Yes, and they are very, and the anti-Semites are very afraid to tell it honestly, you know? They hide it, yes? You never know if you are talking to a non-Jew, you never know, is he thinking in his soul, in his heart, anti-Semitic or not, you know? But for the most of them, they don't dare to tell it, yes? Because they know that the government, also the Federation government in Bonn, they are very, very friendly. And they are persecuted by trials, by the court, by the justice, if they are talking or doing something in this direction, anti-Semitic.
Do you feel the increase of anti-Semitism?
Yes, I hear about it so much. I am reading the newspapers every day, and I'm reading some other Jewish newspapers, and I hear many people, my customers and so on, and here in the office of the Jewish community, there are coming letters, many letters, anonymous letters, you know, without the name of the sender, yes. So you know that there is under the surface. You understand me, yes?
You said before that for now the Jewish people in Berlin feel the Jewishness because of Israel. Does that mean to say that they would not feel the Jewishness if Israel wasn't there, or that, or another way, that is, that the, a large percentage of the reason for their feeling is because of Israel there? Because I get the feeling that they would not be as Jewish if they were not, if Israel wasn't there.
You're quite right. Israel gives us the background, a strong background. It gives us the core, to fight for the interests of Israel, And therefore we can't do anything without think of Israel, It supports us in every way. You understand me?
Yeah, I understand.
And if Israel didn't exist, I don't think it was so good.
Is it not good, but is it also that it's necessary? Is it necessary for Israel to be there, for the Jews to be in existence there?
Yes, because there is another question. Population in Israel needs us in the diaspora, because if they can't take all Jews from all over the world, and they can make active the sources of Jews in the diaspora, and so they can support them, and they can help them. Do you understand me? If we all Jewish people, would be in Israel, so it was not too good, because Israel needs us in the diaspora. We shall support them. We shall have connection in the diaspora. We shall give them ideas, and we shall.
I don't like the use of the word diaspora.
I
don't like the word galut either. I believe that there should be a verb. We need Israel, and Israel needs us.
Yes.
And I believe that there should be strong Jewish communities in the free world for as long as possible.
Yes.
And it can only exist in a free world.
Yes.
Without a free world, Israel couldn't exist either. So we need each other.
Yes.
Israel helps us, and we help Israel.
We exchange.
Definitely. We need each other. For a long time to come.
I believe you said there was more anti-Semitism in the rest of West Germany than in Berlin, or at least it was increasing faster. Why is this?
Yes, maybe, yes, this may be a reason that the Social Democrat, you know what this is?
Social Democrat.
Social Democrat Party is very strong, the strongest here in Berlin. And they have, there was ever, since many years ago, before the Nazism, Berlin has been more frankly, more liberated,
liberal
persons. The same like in Hamburg, because they are accustomed to make trades with all the world, So they are more open. They are not
cosmopolitan.
Cosmopolitan.
Willy Brandt, right? Willy Brandt is the head of the Social Democratic Party. This party is openly in favor of Israel, of the Jews, whereas the other parties is among them still some hidden Nazis taking some great part in it. As we know that, for instance, the president of this state, Lübcke, we don't know yet what was his background. Some say he was a Nazi. As the head of the party, of the other party, is Kissinger, the present prime minister. Some say he was a Nazi. So it's not so easy with that.
But you are. Let us talk to each other very frankly. There are many visitors I have talked to who told me when I come to Germany, when I come to Berlin, I never know if I give my hand a non-Jew, I don't know, an older one, I don't know, has he been Nazi, has he murdered my parents, my relatives, or not. Therefore, he doesn't shake hands with them. No, there are many of them. And there are many of them who don't want to come to Germany. You heard it today in the morning from Mr. von Hammersberg. You must understand it.
Morning. If all the Jews in Germany were to go to Israel, if all the Jews in Israel, in Germany, were to go to Israel, what do you think would be the consequences of that? Do you think that anti-Semitism would decrease because there would no longer be a need for it? Or do you think it would increase because Jews wouldn't be here today?
I know exactly what you mean, and it's a very interesting question you ask me. We tell here in Germany about an anti-Semitism without Jews, because we are only in the whole Western Germany and Berlin, West Berlin, we are only about 25,000 Jews, as I told before.
Out of 72 million?
Yes.
72?
No, before the war, before Hitler, there were about 600,000.
No, but what is the present population of Germany?
About 50 million. 50 million.
Oh,
no, I don't mean it is more than about 50 or 55 million.
Ah, with East Germany, it's 72 million.
Yes. Western Germany only 50 or 55 million. Yes. You know, and I mean, to answer the question quite correct, if all the Jews in Berlin would immigrate to Israel, there will be always an anti-Semitism. It is the avian, what is that avian? The shadow of the Jew. Of the Jew. The constant shadow of the Jew, you know?
They need a scapegoat.
Yes.
Have you and your cohorts done anything to show the West Berlin, or the West German Jews, this rise in anti-Semitism? Have you tried to bring it to light so that they would be able to see it?
Yes, we do much to...
And yet they
don't...
To
work against it, to fight it.
Yes, but I mean, do you try to show them?
Yes.
Do you try to show the West German Jews that there is an increase in anti-Semitism?
Yes, they know it. They know it.
They know it, then they feel it.
Yes, they feel it.
If they feel it, why do they stay?
They stay, they have good business.
Yes,
they're very well settled, to most of them, and they live here. Because they are only thinking of their existence. It's not good from a higher level of point of view. But
I don't see how a person could stay in a place where he's really not wanted.
Yes, but he is not worried. He is not troubled. You know, it is not a physical anti-Semitism. It is spiritual. anti-Semitism, you know?
Who's there?
I can't understand you. Such is the matter.
Who is it out there?
Bert.
No, I think Don had one. John has one.
You know, you ask the question, you and you.
Yeah.
I'm ready, I'm ready, yes.
Very good. Okay, go ahead.
You mentioned before that the Social Democratic Party was openly pro-Israel. And this brings about the question of how the German people as a whole are handling their the democratic process within the last 20 years. Are the people actively in support of their parties, or is it just a small group of activists that are running the parties?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. Could you repeat it?
I wondered how the German people as a whole are handling the democracy that they've been given within the last 20 years. Are they, do they just follow a strong leader in their parties, or are they actively aware of differences within the parties, and do they make individual choices as to what they prefer for their party?
Durch eine große strenge oder ist das, dass das repräsentiert wirklich alle Mitglieder, die alle Sozialdemokraten sind für Israel und die alle andere Parteien sind gegen?
There is no
strong leadership.
Strong difference between the one group and the other group. This Social Democratic Party consists of many different various groups, and maybe you don't believe it, but
let's see Germany reunified.
Yes, I have understood you. It is very, very hard question to answer. I must strongly tell you, it's only my personal opinion.
That's fine.
Yes, not the official opinion. I mean that the Teilung, what is it, separation from Western to Eastern Germany, is a security for us that there will not be a war again. I will tell it you very briefly, you know, again, that they will grow themselves very strong, and they will get to a war again.
In other words, if you feel that if Germany was reunited, there would be a Fourth Reich?
Maybe, yes. It could be a danger for the peace in Europe.
When Johnny asked you why the Jews would remain in West Germany with anti-Semitism rising, you said that it's not a physical anti-Semitism, and they have good jobs and they're well off.
Yes.
Well, what I understand of German history, about 1928, the Jews who were living in Germany at that time were very well off.
Yes.
And
yes.
When the threat of World War II and the mass murders that took place, these Jews just wouldn't believe it. And at that time, it was not a physical anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem may be reoccurring again.
Yes.
And
yes.
How can a West German Jew who remembers what happened 25 years ago not feel the threat of it? And how can he place a good job and non-physical anti-Semitism over the fact that he might be exterminated in the next 20 years? How can he do this?
The curious thing with this is that in Western Germany, they are the most part of them are displaced persons from the eastern countries, the Jews. They have not made the experiences from their parents and from other groups of Jewry, no? So they are not thinking about it. they have built up a new life, a new existence. So they are not, there's no trouble for them. Yeah? They are all always thinking material, you know? Have I understood your question?
Very well. I would like to...
Very shortly. There's much more to tell about it, but I must make it very shortly, yes?
From what I understand, it's to you, from what I understand is that it's not actually the Jews of Germany have come back to Germany. Most of them have not come back. There was a mass movement of Jews from the camps, from Poland, from Russia, Romania. Some came out of the camps, some came from Eastern Europe, some returned. Out of the hundreds of thousands, you have 25,000 people. Actually, this is not meaningful, and it's not a great number. Some of them stay here because they are elderly people. Some newborn come out with some new ideas. We heard this boy there, but it's one of the very, very few. I hear the statistics. It's a declining community. Last month it was over 6,000, this month it's 5,800. Those are more or less the facts. I know, and everyone here is almost waiting. They have their pension, they have their good living. If God forbid the Nazis will be more or less going, I think they will be leaving as well. But this doesn't mean there's a Jewry in Germany. Once in Germany there lived 600,000 Jews, today it's only 25,000. So it's nothing to compare, it's only a few. Well, I want...
I have a last word, please, yes? Maybe there can be a misunderstanding. We told about the right extreme party, the NPD, yes? No. You must know that many of the members of this party are not the members of this party because of their recently Nazism thinking and so on, and or they have not been Nazis before. They're very, very young people, for a part of them, and they are unzufrieden, unsatisfied. They are changing from the one party to the other party. They are always unsatisfied with the government, with the politics of the government. I hope you understood me, yes? So you must consider this too. It's not only, it's mixed up with Nazist thinking, but it is also some other groups who are unsatisfied with the other parties, so they go over, they are switching over.
I think in the name of the group I can express to you, Mr. Kroll, our thanks and gratitude that you came here, because again this meeting helped the group to understand more of the problem. And from the way they put questions, you see they are getting more and more acquainted with the problem. And I would not expect that they will already put forward such questions after being here only 48 hours. So you're doing very well. And if you did it, so it's thanks to the wonderful arrangements you, the community, made for us here to have all the people come here and your representation. I want to thank you and wish you good luck for the future.
I have just visited the birthplace of my mother. The Kaiser Augustine Victoria Hospital.
Wouldn't vote. Yeah. Listen, fellas, this is a very serious problem that we want to try to understand here. We made a long trip to come to this city because there's something very, very special and very important about this city. And we were put on to all this effort and all this labor and all this expense just to come to see a very interesting, nice sightseeing trip. There was a reason for coming here. This city is responsible for the death of the Jewish people. And then, in the same sense, I think, when we get a good, long perspective on it, the city may also be responsible for the life of the Jewish people, because the state of Israel was born out of the ashes of this death. Life and death are connected. Very often a mother gives birth to a baby, which is always accompanied by the shedding of blood, and the mother dies in the process. In a very mystical and a very deep and original sense, from the very beginning of mankind, life and death are connected. The life, the giving of birth to the state of Israel, I think, occurred as much in this city as in any other city on the face of the earth. And I'll explain these things, but I'm just setting out the lead sentence in the paragraph to show you what I believe. And then I'm going to try to demonstrate it and prove it to you. And then I want you to ask a lot of questions about it. If you understand what happened here, then you will understand a lot about the whole historic fate of the Jewish people, not just in Munich, Germany in the 20th century, but what always happened to the Jewish people in every Munich, whether it was called Warsaw, whether it was called Moscow, whether it was called Odessa, whether it was called Kishinev, whether it was called Vilna, in every country, in every century. And what happened then is that a watershed took place. And I think it may be safe to say, although nobody will know for another 500 years, that if we handle ourselves right, and the first great thing we did was to create a state of Israel, that's what I call handling ourselves right, then we may be able to prevent ever again anything occurring of the nature that occurred in this city. In other words, for thousands of years in hundreds of cities, Jews were slaughtered like sheep. It happened in York, England. It happened in Madrid, Spain. Now, maybe we've reached a point, maybe we're gambling by our intuition, maybe we've reached a point in our history where that will never happen again. Because out of the death that took place here, we created the life-saving possibility of an Israel which may henceforward, for all time, protect us against what occurred here. Now, all of these are called historical hypotheses. We're not sure, we don't know. Nobody of us is going to be here 500 years from now to prove whether I'm right or wrong. But it's as good a hypothesis to go on as any other. When you try to understand these abstract historical things, you have to try and make them concrete as you can. And that's why coming here to this city was as concrete a way as I could figure to try to take these broad historic ideas and make them real for you. In this city, Hitler got started. This afternoon, we're going to try to cover the ground, retrace the steps, see all the places he went to and where it all happened. He came to this city right after the World War I, 1918. He was discharged from the German army as an authentic hero. He loved the fight from 1914 to 1918. He enjoyed it. He was a corporal. But he received the Iron Class, the Iron Cross Second Class, and the Iron Cross First Class, and there were almost none, and I mean literally none, of the millions of German soldiers who were below the rank of officer who received the Iron Cross First Class. There were a handful of them. It was reserved for officers in higher rank. Why did he get it? The guy was a fanatical fighter for Germany. When World War I started in 1914, he wasn't even in Germany, he was in Austria. He never became a German citizen until much later in the game, by a trick, up in the province north of here, in Hanover. He worked out a deal that a judge gave him German citizenship. He was about to become the chancellor of the country, wasn't even a citizen. He was in Austria. He was a bum. He was a beatnik. He was an art student. He was poverty-stricken. His family wouldn't give him a nickel, and he didn't want to take it anyway because he hated his family. His father was a postal office clerk. And there was nothing that Hitler could think of that was worse than that, more dull, more boring, more stupid, more ridiculous. And it's the typical thing, fight the father, reject the family, go to hell, get away. And the family said, thank God, you go to hell, bye. And he went off to Vienna and didn't ask anybody for a dime. And he lived there for 3 or 4 years, which were, he called, the toughest years of his life. But that's where he learned the poison very early in the game when he was 18, 19, 21 years old. The poison was, he learned to hate the Jews in Vienna by looking at the figures of Jews he saw walking around the streets in long black coats, and he's got mocking, scorning, bitter comments about these dirty, greasy Jews with their long coats and their long beards and their stinking smell, and they're evil because they deal with all the vice, with women, prostitutes and pimps and money, and they cheat you, and he developed a psychotic, paranoid, sick hatred of Jews, which was part of the other half of the coin of the belief that the Germans, now he's an Austrian, don't forget, but he believes that the Germans are the greatest, cleanest, purest, most marvelous people in the world, the Aryans, the chosen race. They are the ones who, questions later. If you have a master race in the world, it's the German master race. If you have the lowest form of scum of humanity, it's the Jewish race. And these two things set into his mind when he was 19 or 20 years old, and never got out of his mind. Slightly less obnoxious than the Jews, but only slightly less, was everybody else. Slavs, Poles, Czechs, Russians, all scum. And it's the destiny of Germany to rule the world. And in 100 years, he was saying this when he was 120, in 100 years we can have 250 million Germans on this continent of Europe, and we will own the continent of Europe. From the Atlantic out to the Pacific, because Russia goes to the Pacific. Now he was restless, and he had no way to give form or expression to these ideas, and he had no way to put them into practice until the Great War came along. And in the war, here would be the chance for Germany to prove she could win the world. So when the War of 1914 broke out, he ran to Austria to Germany, enlisted, and fought hard. There are accounts left of other soldiers in the various outfits in which he served. He was wounded badly twice, almost blinded once in a gas attack. All the other soldiers with whom he served couldn't understand him. They thought he was a kook. They thought he was queer. The rats were biting him up in the trenches. In the trench warfare in World War I, the men were standing up to their thighs in mud and muck. He didn't care. There was no food. He didn't care. Nothing bothered him. He was as cool as ice. Kill the French. Kill the Germans. They're the Russians. Kill, kill. That was a joy. 4 years of it. But it was over. The Germans had lost. He went in for state of shock. He couldn't believe the German army lost the war on the battlefield. It was impossible. Some treason had taken place. Something had gone wrong. And he developed the theory that there was a stab in the back from the German population back home. The army was ready to be destroyed. It wasn't the army that had lost the war. There were traitors at home. Who had lost the war? Who were the traitors at home? The Jews, poisonous vampire Jews in the German population back home. They were the ones that had caused a stab in the back of the army. When he came out of the war in 1918, he came here to Munich. And that's when he decided to go into politics. Go into politics, what does that mean? Found a crazy man who had a party called the German Workers' Party. He went to a meeting of that party. He joined the party. He was member number 7. And he decided that he would take that party and he would make that party, which had 7 members, into such a political instrument as to conquer the country with it. Which is exactly what he did. He developed the theory that what you have to do is terrorize people. Deliberate terror. Conquer people's minds and conquer their bodies by terrorizing them, threatening them with weapons, with guns. He decided, secondly, that the way you win people over is by oratory. And he was a fantastic orator. And he decided, thirdly, that the way you win people over, because people are only children, they're babies, is by the way the same way that you get the attention of babies, by toys, by gadgets, by symbols. He invented the symbol, this one. Simple little thing. He hypnotized everybody. You put this on great big 10-foot high red banners and flags. You attach it to big shiny varnished poles with bright aluminum and nickel. You put long ranks of people carrying these flags, and you beat the drums, and if you do this at night where you can build fires in copper pots and have people march down long rows carrying these flags to the drums and the fire, then you awaken the deepest instincts of primitive brutality in people. And at the same time, you take people and you dehumanize them, you depersonalize them. They are no more than the flagpoles or the drumsticks. They're not human. And it's a mass hypnosis. But this all sounds childish. But if you were to sit down to make a plan of how you wanted to take over a country, this is exactly what you would do. And the motivational research people and the industrial psychologists and all of the psychiatrists that we now have 40 years later that didn't exist then, almost 15 years later, would have told you that's the recipe. If anybody in this room has got the guts to do it, I'm telling you you can take over 200 million Americans the same way that he took over 50 million Germans. Pageantry, symbolism, mass hypnosis, mass ceremonialism, all directed toward an evil end, because he believed that people are basically evil. And all you gotta do is awaken the evil in them and you can get them to do anything you want. And he did exactly that, right outside here on the street, are very nice human beings walking around, any one of them above the age of 50 or 60, and there are millions of them out there on the street, decent, upstanding, righteous, Christian, church-going Germans, were whipped by this hypnosis into a frenzy so that they had absolutely no compunction about taking you and putting a knife and cutting your throat and singing a song while they watched the blood spurt out. Enjoyed it. They taught them how to enjoy it. Now they're shocked today that they did it. All German nation today is in a state of shock. Still 25 years later. The German nation today is split in half. The young ones, under the age of 25 or 30, say, what the hell, we had nothing to do with it. But how could our parents have done it? And the parents say, well, we don't know why we did it. And we don't know how it happened. We didn't really mean it. We'll pay you reparations money. We're sorry we did it to you. We'll be friends with Israel. We'll recognize you. We'll give you planes and tanks to fight the Arabs. What do you want from us? Anything. The fact of the matter is they did it. Because he was clever enough to control the mass psychology of these people and direct them into this reign of terror. I started here in this city in 1919 with 7 people. 4 years later, as short a time as that, he was ready to try to take over this country by a putsch, right here in this same city. 1 year later, in 1920, he had the guts to announce that there would be a public meeting of the German Workers' Party in the Hofbräu House, which I'll tell you about in a minute, which has 2,000 seats, a party of 7 members, has the nerve to call a meeting in a room that will hold 2,000 people, and supposing the 7 people came, or supposing 27 people came, or supposing 57 people came, he'd be a laughing stock, wouldn't he? He held an oration there for 4 hours. He had them cheering the rafters, tearing the place down. Why? What was he saying to them? He was saying to them, the German army didn't lose the war. Germany was stabbed in the back by Jews. We've got to rip the Jews out like you rip out rats and scum and lice. The German army should never have surrendered. The German government, which surrendered and signed the Versailles Treaty, should be killed, every member of them. The government should be torn out. We will not agree with the Versailles Treaty. We will not agree that we cannot have an army. We will not agree that we have to pay all these billions of marks of war damages. We will never agree. And you start pounding the table and you start whipping the crowd, and boy, you've got it with you. He had 2,000 people there in the Hofbrauhaus on February the 24th, 1920. You want to go there to the Hofbrauhaus Sunday night after we come back from Dachau? I want you to go there. We can't get a table for the 30 of you. Sunday night, there will be 2,000 Germans in that room, because that's my favorite night to go. There are long wooden tables. Just 1968, it looks just like it did in 1920. When you walk in that room Sunday night, you just think of that room exactly as it was 48 years ago. Long wooden tables, great big tankards of beer, and they sit there and they slop the beer and they bang the table with it and they sing their songs, all people singing, different groups in different corners. Hitler stood up on the table there in that crowd and he had it right in the palm of his hand. So when you go there Sunday night, you walk in that room and you think of what the mass psychology must have been then. And it's frightening to walk in that room. You go in there, you're going to eat supper there. You can't get a table for the 30 of you. Scatter. Sit in twos. You'll sit next to some ordinary people. You'll start talking. You'll ask them, they'll be interested in you. They'll see you're something different. They'll say where you're from. You'll tell them you're Americans. They'll start telling you about how America is the wonderful ally to save the German people. Which is true. We rescued this country from the defeat of World War II. This is one of the reasons the Russians are sore as hell at us. One of the reasons we got into a Cold War with the Russians was because the Russians wanted to take this country in 1945 and wipe it off the map. And the United States government said no. Instead, we put in $3 billion and we rebuilt their economy. So they like us, we're their allies. Never mind that we bombed them in the war. We've rehabilitated. And after they talk to you and find out you're an American, and then they'll ask you about Robert Kennedy, and they'll say it's a very shocking thing. And you let them talk, then you begin to talk. You begin to ask them about the political situation in Germany today. You begin to ask them, is there a chance for the Nazi Party to come back again today? And start a conversation with them for as long as you can go and without getting offensive. Meanwhile, while you're talking to the guy next to you, keep your eyes and your ears open to soak in the atmosphere of that whole room. And remember that that's the room that Hitler began in. That's one, it's a beer cellar. In 1920, he already had people listening to him. By 1923, he was ready to make a putsch to take over this city. And if he took over this city, he could take over Germany. He was going to make a march on Berlin, just like Mussolini had done the year before. In 1922, Mussolini made a march on Rome, took over the country. This is 1923. Hitler's going to make a march on Berlin and take over Germany. But first, he's got to take over Munich. Now, he started a comic opera putsch. It really was sort of a comic opera. This is Charlie Chaplin, don't forget, the little mustache. It's a silly looking little man. Not very charismatic. Not very handsome, not very tall. Voice kind of high-pitched, not very deep, built physically. But little Charlie Chaplin goes into the Bürgerbrau Keller, now that's the name of the second beer hall. And he's got the three leading politicians of Bavaria, the southern part of Germany, in this room. And he's trying to get them to announce